Session 9.
Sashi Bhagi Jushimeta Sham Rira Vinci Nyende Gyanpati Sange Shindu Mite Uwagi Jogunanda Shimba Shubhashu Sangye Chadam Sangye Chonama Chanchu Badu Dami Kasuchi Dagi Chunyen Dibe Sunamki Dola Penche Sangye Chubasho Sangye Chadam Sangye Chonama Chanchu Badu Dami Kasuchi Dagi Chunyen Dibe Sunamki Dola Penche Sangye Chubasho Sangye Chodam Sangye Chodama Chanchu Badu Dami Kasuchi Dahi Chunyen Gimbe Sanamgi Yola Penche Sangye Chubashi
Okay, so please get ready to meditate. All right. Watch your breath. Then imagine that you're looking from the left side to the right side of this room, and move your eyes slowly from the left side to the right side in your mind, and just be aware of what you see, the colors and the shapes, different objects. Then go to step number two and try to analyze where they came from, where these things came from, what's making them be there, and get in touch with your old feeling about it, your old feeling that you've had your whole life, is that those things exist out there, away from you, that they have some existence from their own side, that that's what real means, that you walk into the room and the room has been there and it exists outside of you, and that each object that you see has its own qualities, and that, and if you think about it, that's why you get in disagreements with other people about whether something is good or not. You, in your heart, you believe that that thing is one way or the other from its own side. And maybe the other person doesn't know enough, or maybe they're blind, or maybe they don't understand, but they don't see what you see. And what you see is really there in the object. So try to reconstruct that way of looking at things. Get in touch with the way you've always looked at things. You think they exist out there in the way you see them, and you think that's reality. Pretend you didn't hear anything about emptiness. We're trying to reconstruct your ignorance. We're trying to see how ignorance sees things. then move on to the middle way view, number 3, and try to start looking at the things around you as if they were a direct result of whatever good things or bad things you yourself have done. So as you look around the room and you see a friend, you think, this person exists in my life. I can see them only because I was good to someone in the past. And that's what's making me see them. And if you see something you don't like so much, then reflect on how it's coming from something negative you thought or something that you did in the past. And now you know enough to understand that it's not voodoo, and it's not that person wasn't created in a bad person factory and sent here to bother you. It's your own mind forcing you to interpret colors and shapes in a certain way. And each person in the room is having a different interpretation. And it's not a matter of choice, it's forced on them by their karma. And so some people in the room really do see a lot of maybe irritating people. And some people in the room see a room full of wonderful beings. And now look at the room that way. Now the last step. Go through the room like Sherlock Holmes. And you're like, what's that guy's name? Rinpoche really likes him. The funny detective. Columbo, yeah. He dies for Columbo reruns. And go through the room and try to find... Go through different objects. You know, you can go through different... You could check the flowers, check the altar, check the roof, check the floor, check the other people here. Try to find something that's not there because of your own mind synthesizing it in a certain way. Try to find something, you know, be like a fly that goes from object to object, and when you land on a new object, then check it. Check how you feel about it, and then try to see if the way that object is coming from you. Try to find one that's coming from its own side. The idea here is that you don't find anything, and at the end you just throw up your arms, you know, and you say, it's empty. There's nothing in this room that is not coming from my mind. And that then you reach emptiness. This is a way of reaching emptiness. So go to the room, pick object by object, things you like, things you don't like. Try to find one that your mind is not responsible for. at a certain point, if you reach nothing, if you decide there's nothing in this room like that, then set your mind on that. That's called jogom. So we're moving from chegom to jogom. Chegom is an analysis of Columbo walking around the room and checking each thing. And then when you're satisfied, when you checked enough things, put your mind on the emptiness of that, meaning put your mind on the fact and let it rest there, that there, decide that there's nothing in this room that's not coming from your past actions and your past words and your past thoughts. And set your mind there and rest there and focus on it. If your mind wanders, if you hear a car or you hear someone shift, then be Columbo and go check that object and then come back to fixing your mind on emptiness. Again, don't let your mind get spaced out. When you get distracted, look at that object. Check if it's coming from your mind, if it makes sense. And then decide it. It doesn't come from its own side, and let it go and leave it, and then focus on the fact that there is nothing like that. And use each distraction to check another object, and then bring your mind back to the fact that there is nothing that's coming from its own side. And then stay there. and come out of that meditation. Okay, then relax. Okay, we'll just do like 10 minutes of sutra, okay? Just for good luck. Page 6. And it's the fourth line. This is Avalokiteshvara wrapping up. Alright, and it's called Dordupa. And this is the last words that he speaks in the sutra. And he says, Sharipu Chandra Samba Samba Chimba Shiraki Parata Chimba Samala Deta Lapa Chao. And it's exactly what we just meditated on. Okay? He's saying that's how you should practice trying to see emptiness. Alright? And that's a really good meditation what we just did. We'll do it again in the afternoon. But that is, you know, you need an emptiness meditation, that's it. And that's exactly how it should go. It's very important to realize that number two is false, okay? You're trying to review how you used to see things wrong. So don't practice it too hard, okay? You're going over the way that you used to look at things. And you still have it. Even as I talk, as you look at me, you're having it. And I'm having it with you, you know? I see you out there. I believe you're out there. If I feel good or bad about you, I'm trying to do self-existent methods to make you change, and they will never work, and so I'm unhappy, and I get mental afflictions, and then I do something bad, and I create more of the same. And that's the wheel of life. That's how it works. That's what the meaning of the 12 links is. And then number three is dependent origination. It's understanding that each object, how I feel about it, and the way I see it, is determined by imprints that were made in my mind in the past. Okay, and they are exerting themselves. I have people say, I don't believe in these imprints. It sounds kind of weird. I say, did your mother send you to first grade? And they say, yes. And then I say, why? And they said, she wanted me to learn something. And I say, what? I remember what I learned in the first grade. What did you learn in the first grade? I learned addition, and I remember Mrs. Melvin teaching us how to draw the letters, A, B, C, you know. And your parents send you there with the intention of Mrs. Melvin putting an imprint in your mind that will carry through at least to freshman year of high school, you know. you know, when everybody drops out, you know. So don't tell me Americans don't accept the idea of imprints. You know, a teacher in first grade is judged on how well they can put the imprint in your mind. You know, and of course you want it to carry on until you reach your, you know, business days in New York in your 30s and 40s, so you can use all that algebra that they tell you. You know, you know. But anyway. That's we believe in that, and everything you experience is a result of those imprints ripening, and so that it becomes the art of creating good imprints. Okay, detar lapa jao. That's how you should practice. Okay, understand that these things are coming from your mind, and then get good at the art of making imprints. If you want a shortcut. Study the Bodhisattva vows and the Pratimoksha vows and get a short list from an enlightened being about, hey, this is the best way to make good imprints. And then check them every hour or 2 hours. And that's the whole point of Tundruk, if you're studying Tundruk. That's the whole point. That's the meaning of it. If you want to speed things up, take a proper tantric initiation, get proper teachings on those initiations, and then take those vows and keep those vows and keep those practices. And then those imprints are designed to flower within one lifetime. You know, that they're specially designed to create their effect before you die. Dene chonden de tingin sin dene shen de chandu samba samba chambo papa chame sin wan tu la lekso. Dene chonden de tingin sin dele shen de means then the Buddha came out of his meditation. And Choni Lama says, Tingin sin dele shen be tsulten de. Tsulten means he pretended to come out of his meditation. All right. You know, he said, he like, oh, you know. and he's been running the show with these two puppets, you know. And then he like pretends to come out of meditation. Okay. Then he says, Chenri si wan chula. Then he says to Avalokiteshvara, Lekso, lekso, rikipu dedeshino, rikipu dedeshinte. And it says here, lexo shechawa chine, lexo lexo. Okay. There's this big debate in Buddhist literature. In Buddhist writing, as well as in any other kind of writing, it's considered a fault of writing, a grammatical error, to repeat something unnecessarily. Okay. If you sent that manuscript to Snow Lion, they'd probably cut it out, I think. You know, why does the Buddha have to say, right on, right on, right on? You know, I mean, can't he just say it once? Lexo means right on, perfect. Okay, and he repeats it three times. And there's all these debates in the monastery, you know, why did he say it? First he says, lexo, and then he says, lexo, lexo. Okay, and so here's Choni Lama's take on it. The first lexo means kyuki deta temba de lekpa tembe lexo. The teaching you have just given us is good. And so I say, right on. Okay? It's good. Lexo. So the first one is the teaching you just gave is good. Okay. Shechawa chinte means he gives his blessing. Okay. To Avalokiteshvara. Lexo lexo ni sumbani. Now why does he say two more lexos? Says Choni Lama. Shindu lepa tembala tuk geshin. Shindu lepa means it's for emphasis. It's really good. That was really, really good what you taught. Tembala tuk ge means, and it makes my heart happy. Tuk ge means it has pleased the enlightened being. You know, I'm pleased that you have spoken like that. Okay. And then shen yi chesu shupe dundu hapaneno nembo. And why does he add the extra lexo at the very end? You know, it's really the third one now, right? He says, "Shen yi chesu shupe dun." Shen yi chesu shupe dun. Remember, there's all these disciples in sitting and listening to this conversation, and he wants to make a strong point to all of those disciples that they can trust what Avalokiteshvara has said. You know, so the second lexo is, this was, you taught it well, first one. I'm pleased that you taught it well, it was good. And then the third one is, hey you guys, this is really good and you should follow it. You can trust it. It's as good as if I taught it myself. Okay, you know, that's the last lecture. Okay, all right. And then we'll save a few lines for the next class, okay?
This is the end of session 9. Session 10.
Since we're all full of food and we didn't get much sleep, I thought we'd do some sutra, and then have a few questions and answers. So this is an exception. It's called Miksel in the monastery. So you can speak during that time. All right. So think about your questions. I'll do a little bit of sutra, and then if you have any questions, we'll do those, and then we'll meditate kind of heavy in the next session when the food has gone down a little bit, okay? We just got through with Lekso Lekso Rikipu Dedeshino. Well, we just got through with Lekso Lekso Rikipu. And the Buddha is congratulating Avalokiteshvara for explaining things so well, okay? Then he says, Rikipu Dedeshino Dedeshinte. Dedeshin. He says, Deteshino, Deteshinte. Deteshino means, that's the way it is. Deteshinte means, that's the way it is. And, so again, he repeats himself. And everybody has to figure out why he repeated himself. And this is what Choni Lama says. He says, Deteshinte, She Ni Sumbani, Dunji Tawa Shindu Chodan, Tumbar Dembala, Denkat Dewate, Deyan Kornam Yichepi Dunduo. He says, "Dun jitawa shindu chudan tumbar dembala." He says, "Teteshinte means you have taught the Dharma the way it is. That is correct teaching on Dharma. You've given a correct teaching on Dharma. That's the way it is. Teteshinte, he denkat dewa is very difficult to translate. Den means truth, ka means mouth, der means to give. Denkat dewa means to give a seal of approval as truth. How's that? You know, he's the, what do you call it? Now there's a word in English. Certifying it, okay? Yeah, he's like certifying it. He's like saying, Denkat Dewa means, he's like saying, this is true. That's the way it is. That's the way it is. So the first meaning is he's saying, yeah, what he just said is the real Dharma, and that's the way it is. And then the second one is, that's the way it is again addressed to the audience saying, you know, he's right, and you can trust it, and you can follow this Heart Sutra. You know, that's the way it is, good teaching. That's the way it is, you guys. He taught it the right way, and you should follow it, okay? And that's why he says, that's the way it is 2 times, okay? Then the sutra says, Jidra kyu ki tenpa deshin du shiragi padu chimba samala chepachari deshin shepa nam kyang jesu yurango means Jidra kyu ki tenpa, just as you have taught it, deshin du, in that same way. And there he repeats the deshin, right? Shiraki Palatu Chimba, the perfection of wisdom, Samo, profound thing, Chepachate, you should practice it. Chepachate, Deshin Shepa Namgyang Jesu Yorango. Those who have gone that way, which means the Buddhas, Kyang also, Jesu Yorango, they rejoice in what you've done. They're happy with you, okay? And Chone Lama hangs up on the Kyang, okay? Deshin Shepa Nam Kyang Jesu Yorango. Okay, if you know Tibetan, it means the Buddhas also rejoice in what you said, in what you've taught. And I've always wondered about it myself. Like, he is the Buddha, so why does he say also? Okay, Deshin Shepa Nam Kyang Jesu Yorango. He uses the plural here. He says, the Buddhas also rejoice. And the point is that not only do I rejoice in what you've done, which he never states really, except by saying, good job. I mean, that's the way it is. He says, all the other Buddhas also are happy about what you've taught. So that's the meaning of the Kyang. If you wanted to do a good translation, you'd have to know all this stuff. Okay. Let's see if he says anything else. Then he says, Chomden Deki Deki Chikatsene. But you're reciting it, by the way, the Sarame system is to hang up on the ka. Okay. Chomden Deki 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 Chikatsene. Chikatsene. It's like, here's the sutra's ending. Okay. Chomden Deki Deki Chikatsene. Tserende Masharatati Buddha. Okay, Chomden Deki means by the Buddha. This time it's the Buddha, the one Buddha. Deke Cheka means now the Buddha has given his word. And as I said at the beginning, you have here all three versions of the Buddha's speech. You have what we call Jesun Nangwe Ka, which means the Buddha gave permission. Jesun Nangwe means permission, that people could say at the beginning of these sutras, I heard this one time. That becomes part of the sutra. It's not the word of a Buddha. But to be a sutra, you have to be the word of the Buddha. So we classify it as the word of the Buddha by virtue that the Buddha said it's okay to add that. Okay? Okay, so we consider it the word of the Buddha. The words, thus did I hear one time, become canon. They become the Buddha's word. Okay? Then you have the second kind, Jingilapeka, means under the influence of the Buddha's power, other people are speaking. The whole sutra is spoken by a person who in the sutra system is not a Buddha. But it becomes the speech of the Buddha by virtue that he's controlling these two people. You know, it's his mind controlling what they say. So we also call that the speech of the Buddha. Now you have here in the final lines, Chomden Deki Deki Echi Ka Tsene, Ka Tsene. Ka means, it's the ka in Kangyur, for example. Meaning the word of the Buddha. And now you've got the real Shene Sumbeka, the Buddha's own, from his own lips, coming some kind of speech. And he doesn't say much, he just says, great, great, great. That's the way it is, that's the way it is. And that's all he gets to say. His part is very small. And that's called Shene Sumbeka. By the way, the Jingilabeka, it's very powerful, and the Buddha doesn't restrict it to people like Chenrezig Avalokiteshvara. The sound of trees, the wind in the trees, the sound of the ocean waves crashing, you know, if you're at the seashore. We have this little stream. If you ever stay in this room, it's really nice. All these ions coming off it, you know, and it makes this beautiful singing this stream outside here. And it is taught in scripture, in the perfection of wisdom scriptures, that the Buddha can express the Dharma that way. And that's another version of Jingilapeka. So the same powers that move Avalokiteshvara and Shariputra to have this conversation can also cause the sound of trees or bushes or beep beeps in New York. If you listen carefully and if you, you know, if you're keeping your vowels carefully, then they can be great teachings. And that is the word of the Buddha. Okay. Dejikatsa and Tsenanamashara Sharipu. Some of the additions here say Sharatvatipu. And I always was like, why did he suddenly change his name from Sharipu to Sharatvatipu? And Tony Lama loves that kind of stuff, and I like it too. And he says, some people say that, some editions say Sharatvatipu, and throughout here you'll see it go between Sharipu and Sharatvatipu. He says, Sharatvati means, Sharada, he says, means a teacher. Vat means to possess something, in like Bhagavat, Bhagavan is another version of that. So Sharatvat means the woman who possesses teaching, and that seems to be a synonym for his mother. Okay, Sharika or Sharatvati are the same thing. So it's not a mistake or something like that. It's another version of her name, apparently. Okay. Chandandeki dekichkats and it's in the Misharata to Chandu Samba, Papa Chen Mesigman Chutan, Tamjay and the Mekordinata, Lana Min, Hame and the Chibdun, Chandandeki Symbolanga Mutado. They start a big party and everybody, they start to celebrate this, the occurrence of this sutra. And not just the people listening, but at any teaching, we believe there are other kinds of beings that we can't see who are aware of what's going on here. Enlightened beings and also worldly beings, and that we just not, it's like different colors off the wavelength and we can't see them, but they're here. And so at the very end, this big party starts to break out and celebration, okay? And all these beings and all the people there and all the beings listening and the Buddha himself and the two main disciples start to celebrate what's happened, you know. And I'm going to leave that, those lines and not translate them because it's like a, it's considered auspicious that if we leave something undone, we have to get together again and do another one. anybody have any questions, especially about the meditation? Because I want you to get it right, because you have to go home and work on it. You know, everyone is always asking for an emptiness meditation, and now you have one. So make sure it's straight in your mind, and don't be shy to ask questions. And I would also encourage you, I'm going to be gone for a couple, maybe 3 weeks. We don't have classes till, I think, May 19th or something like that. So I think you could maybe get a hold of some of the tapes from this. And I think Aura is good at that, and you could try to reach her. Aura, sorry. And Kevin really loves to make the videos. And by the way, we're really having trouble. I mean, there's a lot of people who want videos, and we don't. He's staying up all night and doing them at home because it's too expensive to do it outside. So if you can help, you know, talk to Kevin or talk to Aura or John, and you know, if you just had two at home, you could do some, and then it's and then we don't want to charge people, so you know, it costs like $250 a set if you do it outside, and so if you can help with that, talk to Aura or talk to Kevin, and that would help the people who couldn't come. Okay.
The four-part meditation that you mentioned yesterday, where you see things as simple as them, and then you see things as concretely existing, radiating their identity to you, and then you see things as where you're taking in data into your mind and organizing it into whatever you're perceiving.
Due to your path karma.
Yeah. And the fourth step, you said, quickly pull the rug out from under that. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, quickly pull the rug out. It's called Turjal. You can't say it, but anyway. Turjal is a special version of emptiness. Okay. And by the way, when you talk about a bodhisattva vow of not teaching people emptiness who are not ready to get the full thing, it's mostly that one. It's called Turjal. And Turjal is where you quickly go into the point that we stayed on gently this morning, okay, and where you quickly remove everything and concentrate on what's left, okay? And that can be a little disconcerting, and it's very, very abused, and it's not taught properly, and people try to do it, and they feel weird, and they feel disoriented or something like that. It's not at all like that. It's more like what we did this morning. But so the danger sign is if you feel anything weird or something like that, it's got nothing to do with emptiness, and just stop it and don't do that, okay? Also, very important to, you can say there's four steps, but there's really five, right? You got to do Donglen first, okay? You have to do some compassion first. Then the odds of anything weird happening are very low. You know, if you're doing it for the right reason and you just got finished with thinking about helping someone who's in the hospital, you're not going to go into some neat Nietzschean space, right? You know what I mean? Is it Nietzsche? Nietzsche, yeah. So, you know, it's not going to happen. And that's better. Pull the rug out. You can pull the rug out on number two or number three, okay? The classic way is number two, right? I mean, the classic way is if I canceled, it's a gakcha. Number two is the gakcha. Gakcha means the thing we think is not there. It's the thing that emptiness is empty of. It's the thing that emptiness is absent of. It's the thing which is absent in reality that you always thought was there. It's the two-headed, 15-foot purple elephant, okay? It never existed, never will exist. A world out there, which is looking at me, and all the feelings I have for each person here, that those are coming from some quality of you and not being laid on you by my mind, imposed by my mind, that's a gakcha. That doesn't exist. There's no such audience like that. There's no such building like that. And you have to get used to that. Pull the rug out means get your mind on the world the way you used to think of it. You know, you're out there. The people I like here, I like because there's something likable in them. And the people I don't like because there's something that's not likable in them. And it's not coming from me. I'm not responsible for all the irritating people I meet. And then just suddenly blow that away and see what's left. Okay, and there won't be anything left, see? That's one way to get to emptiness. Okay. It's like going through a barrel and hitting the bottom. It's called Tani Tapa Dakten Sawe Tsena Manye. Tani Tapa Dakten Sawe Tsena means you try to find a person in this room who could be good or bad from their side and not due to my own perceptions. And if I go through the room and start over here and get over to that side, I'll hit bottom and I'll realize there wasn't any and there never were any. And that's emptiness. And the place you reach at the end of that analysis is emptiness. You can also do it by pulling the rug out of number three. Okay? Number three is true. Things really do exist because my mind is making them happen. And then you can decide, okay, let's do a Columbo thing. We'll do that Columbo interview on the way he used to interview people and say, you know, I know you didn't kill the guy, and I'm not saying that, but, you know, and I'm just wondering why that dirt's on your shoe, you know, so go around to each one, you know, and pick three or four objects and go to each one and say, and investigate them, you know, do detective work and say, did this thing, I don't like this person. Okay? And I have a vested interest here because I don't want to be around people I don't like. Now, I can either try to run away from them, which you did in your life, and you can't because there's always one where you reach. People used to come to me at my office and say, I'm leaving this place. And I'd say, why? And they'd say, I don't like so-and-so who's my supervisor. So I'd say, are you aware that you'll probably meet another supervisor where you're going? You know, and they'll be probably just the same. And actually, that's true because your karma doesn't wear out by moving, you see? Not all the time. Sometimes it does. But it's the same thing. You can just run away from those people, and you can't. But that's not the way to get rid of the people that you don't like. If you stop collecting bad karma towards them, if you stop thinking badly of them, because you know that's what's maintaining them, slowly, Master Shantideva says very profoundly, you can kiss them all goodbye. There's a verse in the chapter on patience where he says, go to the people you don't like and say your fond farewells. Because if you follow my book, they'll start to drop out of your life. You know, either they'll move, they'll be promoted, or they'll most often change into someone you like. If you refuse to collect bad karma towards them, if you refuse to think badly of them, if you refuse to gossip about them, they will actually change. It's wearing shoes instead of covering the world with leather, right? And you can do it, and it works. So go around the room, find a person that you... I mean, the people you don't like are probably the best, because you're always wondering, why me? You know, so work on the people who irritate you or the people that you challenge you, and examine them, whether they exist from their side or not, and see that they don't, okay? See that any person in this room is the way they are because of your mind. And again, not externally, but because the impressions are going off in your own mind, where they were planted in the first place. Then suddenly say, okay, what if that was... Let me remove all the dependently originating people from this room, okay? I'll take out of this room, please leave. Get up and leave. Anyone who's a creation of my karma. Okay? And everyone gets out of the room, and then you're looking around and you're saying, and that's emptiness, you see? That's another way to get at emptiness. You see, you can either pull the rug out on number two, or the things which never were there. You know, everyone who's in this room who's self-existent comes from their own side and is an asshole from their side. Please get up and leave the room, you know? And then there won't be anything there. Nobody will get up because there's no such thing. If you don't like somebody, then straighten out your vows and keep your book more seriously, you know? But you can also do it through number three, which is anyone who's not a projection of my karma, please leave the room. And then close your eyes, wait till all the hustle and bustle finish, and open your eyes and see how many people are there. And there won't be anybody. And that is a kind of emptiness. This is a way to, we call it Tenla Bapa. This is a way to establish emptiness. And then keep your mind focused on that. And that's a very sweet, that's called Jogom. The classic progression is from Chegom to Jogom. Chegom means Colombo. It means an analytical meditation. Jogom means you open your eyes and there's nobody there, and you focus on that for 10, 20, 30 minutes and keep your mind on that. And that's the one that turns into the direct perception of emptiness. Okay. Yeah.
So if I'm sitting here looking at a flower and going, okay, my senses are taking in this data and my mind is, you know, configuring it into colors and shapes and the flower and the smells, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm sitting here kind of watching my mind just, you know, configuring everything into whatever I'm perceiving it as, right? Then at the point at which I pull the rug out and stop that, do I just stop conceptualizing at that point? Or do I just sit there with no concepts? What do I do?
When we say pull the rug out of number three, right, is it that you try to stop your mind from doing it? No. It's not like you're staring at a flower and you're trying not to see it as a flower. You see what I mean? By the way, that's a useless exercise. As useless as going to work and looking at the person who irritates you and wishing they weren't there. You know? It's as useless as going to a church and getting down on your knees and praying that Aunt Joni didn't have cancer. You see? It's not going to change from that. Those things are real because they are forced on you by your past karma. You can't stop them that way. wishing doesn't stop them. You know that by now. It's shutting off the valve at the bottom of the fountain, and then eventually it stops at the top. You stop doing negative actions. You stop thinking negatively about other people. The whole crux is when bad things happen to you. That's where you break the wheel of life. Link number one. You want to get out of here? That's the moment. When someone says something to you, or somebody does something to you, or something bad happens in your life, that's the moment when that's the Buddhist golden opportunity, you know. That's where you can break the link number one. If you don't respond negatively, you just took a step forward. You know, you just stopped one more day of samsara. And if you keep doing that, then sooner or later it turns into a Buddha. But those are the golden moments. That's the moments you should be waiting for. You know, somebody says something to you. Something goes wrong. And it starts to come up in your heart and you say, wait a minute, I'm tired of all this. You know, it's okay. I'm not going to collect new bad karma. I'm not going to see this happen again. You know, and you just cool it. So the point is not to, when somebody bad comes up to you, that you're trying to dissolve them or something like that. Because you can't. And you can try it, but you can't do it. And that's a wrong teaching on emptiness. You can't. It's being forced on you by your past karma. You don't have a choice. So it's not like you can dissolve it. You can't dissolve it. I don't mean that when I say pull out the rug. I mean, pretend that wasn't the case. Well, then who would be left in the room? That's all. You see, pretend there were no dependently originating people in this room. Pretend there were no traffic jams that were created by my blocking other people in the past. Then what would be left? You see? And then you can look around the room and say, well, the room would still be here. And then you analyze the room and say, oh, wait a minute. I also created God still. You know? And you say, well, wait a minute, the highway would be here. And you say, wait, no, I created that too. And then, you know, sooner or later you run out of stuff to examine. And then you reach emptiness and then hold your mind on it. Hold your mind there. That's what I mean, pull out the rug.
So
it doesn't mean to try to stop doing that. It doesn't mean that, because you can't.
So if I'm sitting here taking in this data and watching my mind organizing it to something.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do that endlessly.
That's number three.
Yeah, you do that endlessly.
Yeah.
And what is that sort of fulcrum point at which you shift, and how do you get into that point where you stop watching your mind organize into what you're focusing on, which is what isn't there? That's what I don't understand. How do you go from the end, you know, the end of conceptualizing stuff into whatever the next thing is?
Maybe the question is like this. Suppose I'm in number three. I'm in meditation number three. And I'm looking around the room and I'm saying, I like this person a lot. I kind of like this person. This person I don't know very well. This person bothers me. You know, and I'm looking at each person and I'm thinking, this must have caused that. This must have caused that. This must have caused that. You know, it's coming from me. Okay? And I finish doing that. And I say, okay, now I want to go to emptiness. And the negative side of things, you know. I want to see the emptiness of all these things. So then you think, okay, what if I wasn't projecting anything here? You know, how many of the things in this room would still be here if I stopped projecting? And then you'll start to see nothing. Then there'll be nothing there. By the way, this might be your question. In Jorlam, in path number two, during the intellectual, the attempt to understand emptiness intellectually, when you come to a kind of emptiness in number four, and when you do this meditation in number four, you are projecting emptiness. Okay? Junjitsu Gitopa means you're still using a mental image to pretend there's no thing here that's dependently origination. Okay? And we say that you're still using conceptualization to do that. You're still that is a projection too, which, by the way, means that's a result of virtue, right? You will never be able to do it unless you do some heavy virtue. You see, because that's the ability to get to number four properly is a result of very, very serious virtue. And then some people will never get to number four. They won't do it right. They won't be able to do it right, or they won't get it. And that's because they don't have enough virtue. Before you study emptiness in a Tibetan Buddhist monastery, before you get to that class, which is the 12th year of your studies, you are encouraged to go on retreat and try to collect some heavy virtue. And I tell you, you know, it's good it came up, because you'll never see this stuff if you don't do some heavy virtue. Never. You know. And you have to do some heavy virtue. Serve the Dharma in some way. You know. Classically serving the teacher, and I don't like to say that, because then, you know, I get all these flowers and stuff. But I'm not saying that. I'm not talking about me as a person. I'm talking about the idea of the Dharma, these teachings, this knowledge, this benefit to people. And I don't care if it's this center or some other people. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. The teaching is one thing. But serve it. You know, do something to help it to the best of your capacity. And make it serious. You know what I mean? I'll take the blackboard to class when I feel like it. It's not going to do it, okay? It's not like that. You really have to put your heart into it. And it doesn't have to be this center. It doesn't have to be me. It should be the Dharma, this knowledge. And wherever you are, wherever you live, whoever it may be, that's the most powerful virtue. And if you really need to do that, frankly, you know. And it has to be on the level of some serious contribution to the success of that thing. And that virtue helps you see emptiness. And helping to publish these things or spread these things is, it takes something like that to get to number four successfully, because it's a projection. And those are created by your past karma. You see? The day you see emptiness directly, it's not exactly a projection like that. It's a little bit different kind of projection. It does not involve a dunchi in that way. But that's a little difficult subject, okay? Yeah, did you have a question?
Regarding his question, are you that kind of pulling the rug out to get from half number two to half number three?
Yeah, you are.
Isn't that the same point? I mean, I'm just kind of thinking that that would be, that point he was talking about is the same point you use for two to get to three?
Yeah, it's a good question. When you go from two to three, your number three is an alternative to number two, which is false. Number two is false. And if number two wasn't around, well, then how do things really happen? And that's number three. Yeah, so in that sense, number three is the opposite of number two. Number two is false, number three is true. Number two is a wrong idea about the way things work, and number three is a right idea about the way things work. And number four is an idea that if that wasn't the way things work, nothing else could be possible. It's a delicate difference, okay? Yeah, but you're right. You're right in that sense. Andy?
Yeah, you were saying, like, step number four, you look at the object and you see that it's coming from you, and then, you know, as you see that things, your projections, they disappear. Well, when do you stop, you know, like, and when do you, I'm not sure if I'm using the right word you use, but you stay there, I don't know, you stay with the idea, I mean, see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like in the process you replacing projections with nothing, and then what happens?
Well, it's like this, you're on an object in number four, you say, okay, this thing or this person is, the way I perceive them is projected by me. And then you pose the question to yourself, what if it wasn't a projection? Let me move the projection. Let me take away the projection and see what's left. And what will be left is nothing, because nothing can exist that way. Now focus on that for a while. Okay, keep your mind on that's emptiness. That's a kind of emptiness. Keep your mind on that for a while. What will happen? You're asking what happens over the next few minutes. You will hear a car beep. Somebody next to you will move. Somebody will sneeze. Your mind will go off the emptiness that you finally reached to this noise. Seize the opportunity. This is called the Kyun Lam to Gyurwa, transforming problems into the path. Okay, it's a famous idea in Buddhism. Seize the opportunity. Take that sneeze. Examine it. Why was I interrupted from this perfect meditation, you know? Oh, I must have interrupted someone else before. Where is it coming from? It's a projection of my mind. Is there any sneeze that's not a projection of my mind? Wipe out the sneeze that's a projection of your mind. You get back to the same emptiness you were just done. You see? It's very cool. Interruptions are wonderful. You know, you just seize on it, examine its dependent origination, say, is there any other way that it could be? No. And you're back to the same emptiness you were when you got interrupted. And it's very cool. So, frankly, we're not good enough to maintain a projection of the emptiness for very long. You see? We don't have the karma. The karma wears out. How long does it take? 30 seconds? A minute? Seriously. And the karma wears out. And then a thing comes called an interruption. It's not a self-existing external interruption produced in an interruption factory and sent here. You know? It's your own karma wore out to see the emptiness very quickly because it's precious karma. It's extremely expensive karma to see emptiness. And then you had another interruption. Yeah, and if you're interrupted by your own thoughts, it's just another projection. Your karma to enjoy the perception of emptiness, which is the most expensive karma you can spend, you blew it. And then you had to come back to hear your mind say, what's for dinner? You know, oh, no dinner tonight. Okay? Which is why you got to do heavy good deeds. Help people, help the poor, help the hungry, help the Dharma. You have to do that. You have to do that stuff or you can't make... It's too expensive. You know, it uses up too much good karma. Okay? Andy had...
I hear you keep talking about, in number four, doing more or less with feelings, not with, like, form itself. Should we stay on feelings for a while?
I think feelings are very powerful. You know... The place in the Bodhisattva Charavatara, the guide to the Bodhisattva's way of life, where Master Shantideva raises this meditation, is not in the ninth chapter. It's not in the chapter on emptiness. Where was it? It's a chapter on not getting pissed off. It's a chapter on dealing with the things that make you upset. You know, the bad things in your life, whether it's a traffic jam or your own health, or the relationship you have that's not going well. Feelings are a very great motivation for examining what's going on here. Why is this pain happening? Nobody asks why things are going well. You know, they don't say why me when they win the lottery. they say why me when the doctor says you have cancer. You see what I mean? And that's when your mind gets into a very analytical mode. You know, it wants to know why am I suffering, and the key of where you're going to collect bad karma, and where you're going to lose it, is when you get upset at other people or you dislike other people or other situations. So that's a very powerful place to shoot it. You know, it's a much more powerful place, and that's why that Dumba. Tsorwa, the guy with the arrow in his eye. It's a very nice place to break the wheel of life. You know. You had a lot of questions already. How about this many?
Don't you eventually have to get beyond an object?
What do you mean? A Yul Chen is proposing that she can do without a Yule. Let's see where she goes from here. Okay. You studied a logic, right? So now it's not so hard for me now. A subject is proposing the lack of objects. I think. Okay, I'll give you a chance.
I think what I'm asking you is proposing fixating or thinking about a flower or some object, but don't you have to go beyond that? I mean, that's...
What do you mean when you say beyond?
Okay. Well, you said that matter is a projection. Everything's a projection. But don't you have to go beyond one thing and then kind of get into the nature of reality, get into the whole thing? I mean, or is that the second, is that sort of like the second step to this?
I guess the question would be, and by it's a serious question. It's a very, very serious question. I was grilled on it during my Geshe exams. I don't know who was there. You were there.
I don't remember your answer because I couldn't.
No, it was the it was the former abbot of the nunnery in Dharamsala, who's from Serame, and he was down there for a visit, unfortunately, and in the study of emptiness, it's called Chidangasa Nisu Chewe Ch, which means, you know, what object do you focus on to get the direct perception of emptiness to trigger? You know, what will trigger that? And you start with things. You start with objects like flowers or pots or things like that. That's the useful thing at this point. While you're doing Kedubje's analysis, do it with things. Okay? When you get good at it, the ultimate object is yourself. So for Winston, it's Winston. For Robin, it's Robin. For Fran, it's Fran. For Roy, it's Roy. And in the end, you should reach yourself and do yourself. But it's hard because you have so much investment in yourself, you know. Start with something that you don't feel so strongly about, you know, like a flower or a pot or something like that. But yeah, in the end, when you see emptiness directly, it's always the emptiness of you personally. The first one you always see is the emptiness of you personally. So sooner or later you have to get to that. Now, do you focus on some cosmic law of all things are empty? That's difficult for most people. I mean, most people don't work as well in abstract as they do with concrete objects. And it's true about emptiness as well. It's probably better to start with some kind of concrete object. Okay. Although the Buddha goes through all 18 dhatus, you know, by the end he gets to the consciousness of your thoughts. But he starts with physical objects, and that's where we should start. Okay.
Session 10 continues on the next CD.